Our next speaker is Dr. Sally Brown, who's a research associate professor in the School of Oceanography. She has a PhD from the University of Maryland, is a fellow of the Soil Society, a two-time winner of the EPA Clean Water Act Research Award. She's not in oceanography, she's in forestry, and I apologize for that mistake. And she firmly believes that the beneficial use of what we have considered waste is a key solution to sustainability. So look forward to hearing her talk.
Hi. I guess I don't need this one if I have this one. So that should work. I do like to swim a lot, much more than I like to hike in the woods. So in a sense, the wrong affiliation was okay. I've been doing a lot of work for the last couple of years with King County, who is starting to develop a reclaimed water program. King County is where all your water, when you take a shower, flush the toilet, use the sink, goes. King County has two treatment plants with a third under construction. The two treatment plants in existence now, one at West Point, one at right near the South Center Mall, take all the water that they treat and pipe it into Puget Sound. The new plant that's pretty much status quo for most of the country. That's how treatment plants were designed. The new treatment plant that's being built is Brightwater. It's up north of the city, and it's being built with the whole notion that water is more and more, even in this region, a resource and needs to be treated as such. And so the Brightwater plant is being built to produce Class A reclaimed water, so water that you can use to grow food crops. And the infrastructure is being put into place so that it will be possible to use the water. Realize that conveying water and developing the infrastructure for this is a very cost-intensive process. So to reverse the paradigm of what was done in the 60s and 70s increases your sewer rates quite a bit. So this is a big deal for King County, and they're trying to plan this in an appropriate way. And one thing that you need to know is purple is the color of reclaimed water in a piping system. So whenever you see a purple pipe, you know what it means, reclaimed water. Okay. What's happened in Seattle is a very slow, not full-blown realization that water can be a limiting resource. If you live here in December, it's really hard to imagine that water is a limiting resource. But if you look at the trends of water use versus precipitation, and you look at trends for snowpack, I just came from Cleellum this morning, and usually you can cross-country ski really easily this week, and I saw my first robins up there today. So there's a good chance that the snowpack that we've counted on is not going to provide like it has. Summers are going to get more extreme, and so that discrepancy, and I do need this laser pointer if I can figure out how to use it, the precipitation going down and the water use going up, and this spread is going to increase, and we're going to be faced with water shortages. And in fact, there are a large number of watersheds within the county that have very low flow during the summer months, low enough to be detrimental to aquatic life, including salmon. So reclaimed water is a big potential regular monitored source of water. Okay, the other point with using reclaimed water and making deliberate decisions on how you use reclaimed water is when you take the water and put it straight into a body of water, naturally occurring body of water, there are two things that the reclaimed water will contain to some extent that can have a detrimental effect in a natural water body depending on how much of that natural water body consists of the reclaimed water. So if you're in Arizona and your wastewater treatment plant is discharging into the creek or the wetland, you can be sure that the characteristics of what you're discharging into the wetland in Arizona are pretty much going to be the characteristics of the water body that you're discharging into, because you're going to be making up about 80 to 90% of the flow. Puget Sound, not so much. There's a little more water coming in and a little more turnover. Nevertheless, the reclaimed water has parts per million concentrations of nitrogen, usually about 1 ppm of phosphorus. In a water body, this can lead to eutrophication. In a soil system, when you're beneficially using the reclaimed water, this can cut down on fertilizer use and be a benefit to a grower. The other thing that's been getting a whole lot of attention is that the reclaimed water will likely have some concentrations of estrogen-disrupting compounds. What happens at very, very low levels, nanograms per liter, when you discharge these compounds into aquatic systems, fish tend to be very sensitive species, and you do see changes in ratios of males to females in river systems downwind, downstream from confined animal feeding operations as well as from wastewater treatment plants. So these are two other reasons not to take the water from the treatment plant and put it right into a river body. Okay, look at that background. See how appropriate it is? You'll notice my outfit today is very aquatic colors. When I give talks on soil, I always wear browns. It's very, I'm sorry. So you know now that I don't have a subscription to Vogue magazine. Anyway, the goal with the research was twofold. You want to both convince people that what using reclaimed water is a safe practice, and whether or not this has been tested in Miami, it's very different when you're confronted with reclaimed water from your own neighborhood. There's a whole lot of concern about local conditions, local areas of concern, that generally means test it locally before people will believe it's safe. Second thing is, why would you want this? Is it just plain water? Is it going to be salty like the water you read about in the golf courses in San Diego? Or is this going to be okay? You have to convince your potential customer that what you're offering them is an asset and not a liability. So the research was all geared to demonstrate both that this is a safe thing to do and that this is something that you would want to do. Okay, we did two studies, one with turf grass because, you know what, takes a lot of water when you want to keep a golf course green here in July and August. It's a very large potential customer base, and across the country where you have reclaimed water programs, golf courses, irrigation, turf irrigation, landscape irrigation have generally been one of your major customers. Then a second, less volume, less high volume customer, but also important, are edible crops and flowers. There's a big also effort in King County to keep farms viable in the county. You see growing farmers markets, truck farms. A lot of these farms are located in areas without really water rights for irrigation, and there's a big demand for irrigation water for these farms. Reclaimed water can provide that. Okay, so each, as I said before, so we should go over this. Realize that King County has sponsored research. You can look at the faculty list at the college, at the School of Forest Resources, and see who got their PhDs with money from King County in engineering. There's been a whole lot of support from the Wastewater Treatment Division for research in the engineering division. King County has already been, has been looking at fate of some of these EDCs. This is a paper I did with Dana, who is a grad student of mine, looking at what happens to nonylphenol in biosolids. So this is an ongoing process. Another student just graduated from engineering, looking at ways to degrade estrogen during wastewater treatment. So, okay, and here is Dana, who is now working at Brown and Caldwell, and I miss her dearly. And she did the turf grass study. What we did here was looking at growth response, and we picked three big-time contaminant categories that people are concerned about. How many of you have heard of pharmaceuticals? Yes, very good. How about antimicrobials? Yes, well, fewer, but that's okay. And how about hormones, birth control pills? Anybody in this room ever heard of birth control pills? Okay, have a few brave souls admit that they have. Okay, turf grass we got from a local course, which is a potential customer for reclaimed water, and the golf course tenant wants no part of this reclaimed water. We did a replicated study in the greenhouse here with tap water control with full fertilizer dose, reclaimed water only, and reclaimed water with partial fertilizer dose, and we also added a biosolids treatment. And here you can see the turf cores, and here you can see the chemical sketches of these compounds. Triclosan is an antimicrobial that you'll find in soaps, in toothpaste. Ibuprofen you'll find in anybody's medicine cabinet that has a headache periodically. And estrogen is a good thing to have if you have a female teenager in the house. I'm sorry. Okay. You can see these are all pretty common chemicals. So we collected leachate in this study every 2 weeks. This is not a definitive study. Not every drop of water was monitored. We were looking for patterns. We were not looking as a full... There's a word for this that I'm not remembering, but I bet you would know that, but it's okay. At the end of the study, we also analyzed the soil, splitting it into three depths to look at the potential for movement of compounds through the soil profile. We also looked at plants to see if there was any potential for plant uptake of these constituents. And here's a lot of numbers. And the main thing that you want to get out of this slide is looking at, for estrogen and reclaimed water, it's there. The three forms of estrogens that we looked for, they're all there, and they're all there at very low concentrations. Potentially high enough to cause harm in an aquatic system, high enough that you can find them with a GC, but very low. Biosolids, I was very happy we had the biosolids. We had how many orders of magnitude more estrogen in the biosolids? Several orders of magnitude more. Very good to have something that you can actually find stuff. That was a bad joke, sorry. Okay, E1 you can see present in the greatest quantities. The other two estrogens, much lower quantities. Then, what did we find in the leachate? Again, too many numbers, but the most important thing for you to realize is that you look at are these letters. In every case, in the biosolids, in the control, in the reclaimed water, all the sampling periods averaged, we couldn't find any of these estrogenic compounds in any of the water coming out of the bottom. This suggests that the estrogens in the soil are held in the soil, and if you use reclaimed water as a way to irrigate Foster Links Golf Course, it's one less source of estrogenic compounds to the Green River, which you can detect estrogenic compounds in Green River water, by the way. So, anyway. Soil samples, looking for estrogen in the soil, we did test the soil. We calculated how much estrogen we'd loaded into the soil by monitoring how much water we'd added. There's no way that we could have found the estrogen in the soil because our level of addition was significantly lower than our detection level. It's much harder to detect a compound like estrogen in a soil system, which has a lot of organic compounds, as opposed to water. Luckily, the estrogen content in the biosolids was high enough that we predicted that if none of it had gone anywhere, if none of it had degraded, we would have been able to see something at the end of the study. But this is the original concentration that was calculated above detection limits and all, and if you look at the final concentration, this is in the surface horizon of the soil, no estrogens left. And this makes sense if you read the literature. These compounds are very easy to degrade in a soil system. They're a nice lunch for a microorganism, and they tend to be gone in a soil system within a few days after they've been added to the soil system. There's a very bad joke in the text here. Anybody get the bad joke? Okay. Thank you. Okay, plant samples. It took the analytical work for this was done in King County, and Mike Miramoto was the guy that did all the estrogen analysis. And he spent a long time trying to clean up a plant sample enough to figure out if there was any estrogen in it. And after a month of effort, we got more of those MDL level letters. So no plant uptake of the estrogens. Here we were looking at above ground plant biomass. For some of these organic compounds, I would imagine if they're less likely to degrade in a soil system, you will find some near or on root tissue. Okay, triclosan, antimicrobial toothpaste, reclaimed water, we did find some. We spiked it with, the analysis was C13, we had decent recovery, and we had a lot in the biosolids. Again, it's a wonderful thing to include the biosolids in the design, much higher levels of triclosan. And in the leachate, it's a source, and here are a lot of MDLs, and we got recovery of the label compound, decent recoveries, but none of that triclosan is moving anywhere through the soil system there. Triclosan in the soil samples with the reclaimed water, how much we added and what our detection limit was, we didn't run these soil samples. This was a little bit of a difference. There was no way we were going to find anything, except for those beautiful biosolids. Had enough triclosan in them that we could actually test, and we did actually manage to see some triclosan in the final soil samples that we collected. Here was the calculated rate of addition, what the concentration should have been in the soils. Here's what we found. This also agrees with other studies that triclosan degrades fairly rapidly in a soil system. Another antimicrobial, triclocarban, does not degrade nearly as quickly as in a soil system. So I think this means that you should brush your teeth with Colgate Total and not use Dial soap, I think, is what has the triclocarban in it. Okay, so the conclusions. This is not a complete fate and transport study, but what we can say, and Al Page here is who I consider one of my mentors and has a lot of common sense. He's at UC Riverside, and he basically said that, you know, when you're putting this stuff in a soil system, these pharmaceuticals, personal care products, are really nothing you have to worry about. And that's basically what we saw with this study. The most important part for me of this turf grass portion of the study was that when you use the reclaimed water, even with no fertilizer addition, you got about the same or a little bit higher yield than if you used the regular water with synthetic fertilizer. And if you bumped that fertilizer in the reclaimed water up to about 50% of what you would add in a normal system, you get a higher yield than you would. So if you want green grass, this is a good way to go. If you're concerned about salts in the soil and soil pH, we saw a nice increase in pH. This would be considered a much better soil pH in the reclaimed water treated soils than in the control. This is a little bit acid here. Soil EC did go up in the one reclaimed water treatment that had all the fertilizer as the control, which says maybe you ought to cut back on the fertilizer a little bit if you're going to use the reclaimed water. Okay, and as you can see here, if you add up the nutrients in the reclaimed water, if you're a golf course superintendent, you're getting a reasonable amount of fertilizer with this water, so you're getting an added benefit for how you maintain your turf. Okay, can I keep you guys awake for a little bit more of another study? Okay, edible crops. This was fun. We got to grow food and eat it. It was a very nice study. From the public safety focus, we stayed away from the triclosan and the hormones and went right for the metals and the pathogens, covering all bases here. Sue Kim at UW Botanic Gardens did the growth evaluation and should be having papers coming out on this fairly soon. We started with a greenhouse study. We started by collecting soils from a truck farm where they were begging for reclaimed water and weren't allowed to get any for the last two seasons. So there is a demand for this. We collected the soils from there and grew things that would be grown locally and made some sense to test for. Strawberries we used because they can be eaten raw. They're a great local crop. Oh, I have 3 minutes? Ha, fat chance. Okay, I'll go really fast. Carrots have dirt on them, so they could be contaminated, and lettuce is known to take up a lot of metals. What we basically saw is with the reclaimed water, nothing happens, which is great. Sue Kim saw slightly increased yields compared to a control and much lower yields than when you use a full dose of fertilizer. Metals, nothing going on in the lettuce, in the carrots. Pathogens, no pathogens. There was a few more total coliform in some of the control soils. Total coliform is something you find in soils. This is not something you get upset about. I was very excited here. The best part of these results were how I integrated the picture of the carrot into the back of the graph. Okay, that's the best part. We did this study again outside last year at the South Treatment Plant. Kristen McGiver, Master Gardener, was in charge of the plots. We used biosolids compost in addition to the reclaimed water. And here you get the story. In the sandy loam and tap water, this is the yield of the corn. Here, when we use the sandy loam and the reclaimed water, you could have a lonely dinner. When we use the biosolids, the GrowCo amended soil and tap water, you could have a party. And you could have a little bit more of a party when you use the reclaimed water in conjunction with the biosolids. In terms of metals, The actual thing that we found that was a little surprising was that the metal content in the commercial topsoil that we used was significantly higher than in the biosolids compost. We also found some E. coli in some of the soil samples, and that was a little bit upsetting. This is, by the way, the control plot. This is the plot that had the biosolids compost. You can see there was a little bit of a yield increase there. What happened was the commercial topsoil not only had metals in it, it had E. coli and fecal coliform in it. The main conclusion of this study is you should check where you get your commercial topsoil from. And what we did to celebrate the end of this harvest, and it was a wonderful thing, was have a buffet lunch for potential customers, regulators, people that worked in the treatment plant, and we served stuff grown in the garden. And then we had a pick-your-own-potato event so everybody could get their hands dirty. And I think that's a much better way to communicate than showing graphs, even if you put the lettuce in the background. So hopefully we'll have another lunch next year. So thank you. Okay. I just got a sign that I can repeat the question, which means if anybody has any questions. Yes, sir.
Based on your research and the one part per million, why is the King County report on reclaimed water still pushing direct augmentation to streams?
Direct augmentation to streams, there's a lot. Okay, the permitting structure. Okay, why is King County pushing direct augmentation to streams? There's a carnation treatment plant in operation now that has a membrane bioreactor water system, and what they have done with that is use it for wetland enhancement. They created a wetland. There was an existing farm pond that they now turned into a wetland, and it's a wetland polishing system. The Tulalip tribe is doing something similar with their MBR water. The way the regulations are currently structured in King County is for groundwater recharge, even groundwater recharge with surface percolation, you have to meet groundwater standards for reclaimed water, even though those are more stringent than drinking water standards. So King County is being faced with a bit of a regulatory and structural nightmare. I think if they're pushing direct stream augmentation, it's not, as I've understood in discussions with them, what they're looking at as a long term, but they're looking at this as a way to use the wetland to use the water from carnation. Is that, it's a political thing rather than a science thing. Does that didn't answer you at all? That's the best I can do, I'm sorry. Anybody else? Yes. It was, yeah, the plants that we were growing were in about a 50-50 mix of the commercial topsoil and composted biosolids. And it's, GroCo is the name of the product, and it's sold in King County and elsewhere, and it was used, for example, in the Flower and Garden Show the last weekend or so.
Yeah, and then those that you said when you didn't have any traceable amount, what was that growing in? You said that the biosolid and the actual commercial soil was the worst effect in terms of traceable amounts.
Oh, trace metals?
Yeah, whatever you were basing.
Okay, okay.
And then the biosolid was less so, and then was there another type of soil you were growing in?
No. What we used in this study was commercial topsoil and biosolids, and the commercial topsoil was used alone. The biosolids was used mixed with commercial topsoil. I didn't show any of the data for plant uptake of metals from the outdoor study. In the reclaimed water study in the greenhouse, I showed it was just all soil. There was no biosolids compost in that study. It was just reclaimed water irrigated. In that study, I showed the metals data. There was no difference between the reclaimed water irrigated and the tap water irrigated, all grown in soil. In the outdoor study, there were slight differences in plant uptake when you had more commercial topsoil. It was nothing of any health concern. I didn't show that data, but they had about six times as much lead, for example, in the commercial topsoil as in the biosolids compost. There was slightly higher lead in the lettuce grown in that soil, but nothing that was of any public health concern.
What's happening to it, that if you use the reclaimed water and it has a substance in it, in trace amounts, and you're not showing it in the produce?
The amount of lead, for example, that you're adding when you add the reclaimed water, if you irrigated with reclaimed water for about 100 years, you might see an increase of one part per million of lead in the soil, because the lead in the reclaimed water is so low. Lead is very, very insoluble in a soil system. So if you did use that water for 100 years and you did get that 1 ppm increase, it would sit in the top portion of the soil for the next several hundred years and really not do much of anything. Some metals will be more active. Yes?
Just the practicality of actually using it on golf courses and agriculture, do you have to truck it around, or do you envisage a pipeline, a purple pipeline?
Brightwater, the treatment plant in Brightwater, is being built with purple pipelines. And there's a bit of an issue now because some of the tunneling equipment is a little bit stuck about 400 feet below the surface, and so that's putting a bit of a delay in this process. One of the hesitancies about trying to develop a beneficial use for reclaimed water in the south part of the sound is you can't truck water. It's really not viable to truck water. There's such a big pipe going right to Puget Sound. How many billions of dollars is it going to cost to change that infrastructure, and where's that money going to come from? So for me, you're sitting on, they do 200 million gallons a day is treated in the King County wastewater system. That's enough to bring all low-flow streams right up to snuff in summer months. Where's the infrastructure to do that? Where's the ability to work with ecology to do that? Who's going to pay for this? And this is a major question, because we're going to be facing these water shortages, and you're sitting on a pot of gold. How do you use it? And I think I'm done, right?
You're done.
I'm done. Thank you.